Welcome to the Kennedy Report. I'm Kennedy Hall. Today we begin the season of Advent, about just around now, so we're going to talk about the truth about Advent. We all know the time of the year. It's a time with calendars filled with chocolate. If you're in Canada or in the UK, it's after Remembrance Day or Armistice Day. That's sort of when we kind of view Advent as happening. That's when unofficially the Christmas season starts. That's also the Feast of St. Martin, which is on November 11th. If you're in the USA, you probably think about the Advent season happening as soon as Thanksgiving is over. That's sort of the unofficial beginning of the Christmas season in the USA. Now, we will talk about the difference between Advent and sort of the secular holiday season, because they're not the same thing, and we're going to make the distinctions there. But this is around the time when you're starting to hear all the Christmas music and things like that in shopping centers. So, what are the origins of Advent? What does it mean, and what are we expected to do as Christians? Well, the origins, the history, and the meaning. The word Advent comes from the word that means coming, Adventus, right? It means the coming of Christ. So we read about this in the Old Testament. There's about 4,000 years from the beginning of creation with Adam and Eve unto the coming of Christ. This is a time of hope, but it's also a time of great suffering, hence the traditions that we will talk about that seem a lot like Lent traditions. The traditions of preparing for Christmas with some sort of liturgical or penitential practice stem back to the beginning of the church. There's no official start date where we see sort of codified when they began doing Advent, but it seems to be there since the very beginning. And there's always a constant theme of either 40 days, which begins on November 11th and goes through to December 25th, or 4 weeks leading up to December 25th, which is officially what we do liturgically now in the church. These numbers are very important. You see, with the 40 days for Lent, or the 4 weeks, we see this related to the 4,000 years. From the beginning to the coming of Christ. If it's 40 days, then it's about the 40 centuries that happen. If it's 4 weeks, then it's 1 week equals sort of one millennium from the beginning to the coming of Christ. Either way, you see this number symbolized in both traditions. If you do a 40-day preparation, you start on November 11th, which is called St. Martin's Feast Day or Martinmas, and traditionally that was even called St. Martin's Lent. You'd start from then and go through to Christmas. If you do the 4 week tradition, then you begin on the first Sunday of the liturgical year, and that goes through to Christmas. Now, we can see how both of these fit the need to prepare for the chronology of salvation history. Throughout the first 1,000 years or so of the church, there is not one uniform practice like the much more unified tradition of Lent, but there is a unity of at least the spirit or idea of how Advent is to be carried out. In some place, as I said, we see 40 days. And it's more or less reflected as a pretty strict type of Lent. It'd be a little bit less than the fasting that was common in Lent, but you'd still see a lot of vegetarianism, veganism, not eating meats, fasting, higher liturgical disciplines and so forth, a lot of penances. At other times, the disciplines were regulated to just the clergy or the professed religious. In Eastern churches, there is a strong tradition of fasting, as there always is in the Eastern churches. And the East is known for that, but it's still not as strict as their traditional Lent. Depending on which calendar you use, the dates for Christmas may be a little bit different. So the exact start date and end date might be a little bit different depending on which liturgical calendar that you use. The oldest document in which we find the length of exercises of Advent mentioned comes from the second book of the history of the Franks by St. Gregory of Tours, where he says that St. Perpetuus, one of his predecessors, he held that around the year 480, they declared a fast 3 times a week, abstaining from meat, and that would go from St. Martin's Day, November 11th, to Christmas. So that's sort of the Martinmas, St. Martin's Lent we see there. That's much more rigorous than our Advent is today, but it's still not quite as rigorous as a traditional Lent. Later on, we find the 9th canon of the First Council of Macon that was held in 582, ordaining that during the same interval between St. Martin's and Christmas, the Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays should be fasting days, and that the sacrifice should be celebrated according to a specific Lenten rite. So they actually use the sort of Lenten rites from time leading up to Easter and use that in Advent. Again, we see this same sacrificial, penitential theme that we see in Lent in Advent. The first allusion to Advent's being reduced to 4 weeks is found in the 9th century. This is from a letter of Pope St. Nicholas I to the Bulgarians, moving it from 40 days to 4 weeks. It is true that St. Peter Damian, in the 11th century, speaks about the Advent fast as still being 40 days. and that St. Louis, one of the great kings, 2 centuries later, also kept it for that time. But as far as it's as we're concerned, it seems like many Catholics have held on to the 40-day penitential or fasting tradition, but more as a devotional tradition. Many traditional Catholics will do that today. They'll just do 40 days as a preparation for Christmas, but liturgically it is technically 4 weeks. Throughout the last 1,000 years, we see that while many still hold fast the 40 days, the 4-week tradition is common, and that's probably what most of us are accustomed to. And also in the past, fasting regimens would be changed by the local bishops. So for example, St. Charles Borromeo, he was a great bishop during one of the major plagues and also during the Council of Trent. He's actually the sort of major bishop in charge of putting together the catechism of the Council of Trent, which is perhaps our greatest catechism. And he urged his flock during this time of plague to recapture the ancient disciplines and do things more rigorously. Liturgical practices have also changed over the years to reflect the various feast days and the development of the liturgy in the different rites of the Church. Now, what about the various traditions and customs we have? Where do those come from? So when you look up the history of Christian customs, you'll often find mention of pagan practices. So you'll see, for example, oh, Christmas trees, those are pagan. Or, you know, mistletoe, that's pagan, or whatever. But what are these things actually from, and are they pagan or are they not? Well, first thing we have to remember, there's nothing wrong with the Church baptizing a cultural practice from before the coming of Christ, assuming that it's moral. I mean, the architecture that we see in Rome that's used in the churches and things, that stems back to the classical period, because objectively speaking, the Romans and the Greeks, they had beautiful architecture. Another thing to remember, it's disingenuous to say things like the pagans brought their trees in their houses around the time of late December, therefore that's not even a Christian tradition. People bring a lot of things like potted plants and whatnot into their home. It's a neutral activity. It's decorating a house. You can do that. That has nothing to do with religion. You can use that for celebrating your religious purposes. The thing that matters most is the intent, what it's being done for. People do a lot of things, decorate and celebrate. It'll involve food. It'll involve candles, music, greenery, and so forth. So there's no monopoly on how you use home decor or things like vegetation in your home. So when somebody says to you, oh, you can't use a Christmas tree because that's pagan, they're just kind of being a little bit silly, to be honest. Now, one of the great traditions that I'm sure we're all aware of are Advent wreaths. Now, again, when looking this up, you'll find mention of the Advent wreath being pagan, or you'll find mention of it being Lutheran and not Catholic at all. In reality, we cannot say that the idea of bringing greenery into the home, like I said, is specifically pagan, any more than we can say that lighting candles is specifically pagan. And also, there's no real evidence that it's specifically Lutheran. What it seems like is that this Advent wreath tradition is a regional German or North European tradition. And in areas that became Lutheran, they adopted that tradition and it popularized it in North America, where Protestants came, especially in the USA, before the Catholics. But it is a Christian tradition that stems back to the Catholic time of Europe, so there's no reason why it's not a Catholic tradition. Each of the 4 candles represents one of the millennium before the coming of Christ. That's where the 4 candles come from. Another great tradition is the nativity scene, but with an empty manger, because remember, we're preparing for the coming of Christ. So what some people will do is they'll actually set up their nativity scene, and then as the various days come closer to Christmas, they'll bring certain characters to the manger beforehand. So closer to the time, they might bring the shepherds, the animals, and so forth. Then they'll bring Jesus and Mary a couple days before Christmas, and then after Christmas Eve, they might put Jesus in the manger, and then after that, you have the angels come, and you have the wise men come, people to visit, and so forth. It's a fun tradition, and it's a way of getting ready for the coming of Christ. Different Catholic cultures have different traditions on when to bring in the Christmas tree. And this is something that for a lot of Catholics can be kind of divisive. There's no dogma on when you're supposed to decorate your house. There are just simply customs. So some are very strict, and they will leave not having a Christmas tree until Christmas Eve. Actually, a friend of mine, he would wait until after midnight mass, and then they would decorate the tree when they got home. I'm not sure if they do still do that, but that is something that I heard some people do. A lot of people will wait to decorate the tree until Christmas Eve in general. It's a North American custom for us to have our Christmas tree up for most of December, well before Christmas. So if people are in the habit of decorating their Christmas tree like at the end of November, once again, I'm not saying either way what we should do. One of the things we adopted in our family, though, Because Canada is such a wintry place, there is something warm and comforting about the sort of seasonal decor in the home, the fireplaces, the stockings hanging off the fireplace, and the greenery and the holly and all that, because it is just part of, you know, the seasonal decor, much like you have pumpkins and things from the harvest for Thanksgiving time. So we do a little bit of a compromise in our house. We have a tree up, but then as each week passes, we put a purple or pink ribbon, depending on the week, adorning the tree, sort of like the tree itself is an Advent wreath. And then we'll add the decorations and stages, waiting until Christmas time to actually put the angel on top, to put the religious decorations. And that way we sort of get to partake in the cultural custom of the North American idea of having Christmas decorations up early, but we keep the religious meaning and we have a sort of sense of expectation. And it's nice. It works out great for our family. Again, there is no dogma on how to decorate for Advent, so try and do what is helpful for your family to anticipate the coming of Christ. It is supposed to be, Advent is simultaneously a joyful and a penitential season. That's why it's kind of unique. It's not exactly like Lent. I mean, Lent is you're waiting for a very sad or somber event to take place on Good Friday. It's an event of great magnitude. Christmas, it's a time of expectation, so we should prepare ourselves, but we really are waiting for that joy to the world hymn to finally be sung. So it's a time of waiting for a joyful event primarily. There are other great traditions like the Jesse tree, which people love, which talks about the sort of patriarchal line of Christ. And you go over the prophets and things and days leading up to Christmas. That's pretty great. There is the Advent calendar, most of them having chocolate. Now, if you are going to do Advent calendar, ensure that it's a religious one, or you should, because a lot of time companies will sell an Advent calendar, but it's really just sort of a commercialized thing, and it's reindeer and presents and decorations, but it has nothing to do with Christ coming. So make sure you find a religious one. And in fact, most companies, though, because it is a big market, they will sell those. One point of contention, though, for Catholics, and I'm sure we're going to get some people in the comment sections, I know I get people talking to me about it all the time, is should you listen to Christmas music before actual Christmas Day? Because liturgically, we don't do that. We don't sing Christmas hymns at Mass before Christmas. And there's a purpose to that. So my opinion, and everyone can have their own opinions on this, I avoid intentionally listening to specific Christmas songs, I'm talking about religious ones, as much as I can before the big day. Much like I would avoid, for example, I would avoid saying Christ is risen or something like that during the time of Lent because it hasn't happened yet. That being said, again, I live in Canada, Christmas, I mean, my kids the other day, it's the middle of November, snow is on the ground. And they said, Dad, it's Christmas. You know, they just associate snow with Christmas. And, you know, a childlike heart, I still do as well. So I do love the traditions of the sort of holiday season. So in our house, what we do is we're not extremely strict. I mean, it's not like we're going to walk out of a store if a Christmas song comes on. But we will try to listen to the sort of seasonal tunes. So, you know, White Christmas and Winter Wonderland, those kind of songs, Jingle Bells, where they're more about the season. They get us sort of in the mood for the coming of Christmas, but we try to keep the specifically religious ones until Christmas Day. There is just something, like I said, very warm and cozy about thinking about Winter Wonderland and chestnuts roasting on an open fire, etc. So I try not to avoid those things. The final Advent topic I would like to touch on is how we can best spiritually prepare. We've gone through the sort of fun customs and things, but ultimately, this is the coming of Christ into the world, so it's important that we prepare spiritually. We spoke a little bit about the fasting. So, as I said, generally, it's not as strict as a Lenten fast, but it is advisable to fast nonetheless. And let's be honest, there's a lot of feasting that goes on around Christmas, so a little fasting might be easier on your belt buckle. We have an article on our website written by Matthew Place, and he lays out a whole series of articles on fasting, but there's a specific one, perhaps we can remember to put it in the show notes, where he actually talks about how to fast for a traditional Lenten fast. One thing that he suggests, and I agree with him, he says, perhaps during these 4 weeks, practice the norms of fasting on Wednesdays and Fridays, so you'll have a small meal, something like a snack around lunchtime, and then a regular meal at supper, or you could do a bigger one at lunch and a smaller one at supper, doesn't really matter. You're basically skipping a meal. Have no meat on those days, don't snack, and then on the other days of the week, try to do partial abstinence. So that is where you'll have very little meat, if at all, those days. So perhaps you just have, you know, a ham sandwich at lunch and then nothing else with meat for that day. You can also abstain from other things, but unless you're used to fasting, don't overdo it. Fasting is one of those things where if you haven't done it before, you can try to do too much too quickly, and then you'll end up sort of like a crash diet. You'll end up falling and binging. Also, too, you have to know your state in life. If you've never really fasted before, but you are, you know, a father of a bunch of small children, if you're cutting out a third of your calories in a day, like, you're going to be cranky for the first few days until you get used to it. So there's no point in making everyone else suffer. It's not their mortification, it's yours. So do something that's hard, but something that's doable, and then hopefully over the years, between Lent and Advent, you can work up to it. In order to prepare our souls, we should also adopt some spiritual reading to help. Often at your average parish, you might see booklets and things like that for the sort of coming of Christmas that they'll hand out. This year, I don't know what's going to happen, if churches are going to be open or not. I don't know if parishes are handing everything out because of all the regulations and things. But in my experience, often those booklets that are handed out, they're very fluffy. They don't really give you a good spiritual preparation. They're usually pretty easy. They're kind of non-offensive. They're just sort of general. But if you're trying to have a real strong preparation for Christmas with a real good Advent, then you should do something that really makes you think and really brings the message home. St. Bernard of Clairvaux has a wonderful collection of sermons for Advent and Christmas, as does Dom Guéranger. He has a magnificent reflection on Advent from his famous collection called Liturgical Year. We can also put those links in the show notes. They're free on the internet. And just to give you a little sample of Dom Guéranger's writings here, I'll just read you a little bit. He says, "There are three comings of our Lord, the first in the flesh, the second in the soul, the third at the judgment. The first was at midnight, according to those words of the gospel. At midnight there was a cry made, 'Lo, the bridegroom cometh.' But this first coming is long since past, for Christ has been seen on the earth and has conversed among men. We are now in the second coming, provided only we are such that he may thus come to us. For he has said that if we love him, he will come unto us and take up his abode with us. As for the third coming, it is most uncertain when it will be, for nothing is more sure than death. Nothing less sure than the hour of our death." Just like those who waited for the coming of Christ, there was a lot of anticipation, and they had to be ready the whole time for when the prophecies would finally be fulfilled. Same thing for our life. Christmas is coming, we know when it is, but this should remind us that the arrival of Christ in the world is but the beginning of the journey, and the same wood of the Christmas tree is stripped of its decorations, stripped of its branches, and used to make the wood of the cross at Easter. It is a joyful coming of Christ, but it represents the beginning of Christ's time on earth, which eventually leads to his crucifixion, with which we all must partake in some way in order to rise from the dead. So I recommend that you take on some good penances this Advent. Recapture some traditions, especially in our secular world where it's all commercialized. Bring in these traditions into your home. Have some fun with it, your family, and really make it about the anticipation of the coming of Christ to overshadow all the noise. Especially, it may be true that we aren't in our churches at Christmas this year, depending on where you live, depending on lockdowns. So turning your home into a liturgical place where you have the rhythms of the liturgy and the readings and the decorations and things leading up, it will really help to buttress and strengthen the coming of Christ in your home, especially if we're locked out of our churches. Again, if you have enjoyed this video, please consider donating to us so that we continue to spread the message of Our Lady. We continue giving this content that we hope is very helpful. This has been the Kennedy Report, and until next time, God bless. We'll be right back.